Okay, you're very welcome back and into the third hour of the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. I'm joined on the programme now by Cathal McGlynn, who's a local member of CATU. It's the Community Action Tenants Union. Good morning to you, Cathal. Thanks so much for your time today.
Imagine why, that's Greg. Thanks for having me on here.
What is CATU?
Well, basically, CATU Ireland, it's CATU is a union for communities and tenants. You know, it's a union that represents people that are renting. So people renting properties, council tenants, mortgage holders, and people that are living in like emergency and precarious living situations. So CATU is just basically a union for people that are renting properties and for mortgage holders and stuff.
And what is the work that CATU does versus, say, the Rental Tenancies Board?
Well, basically, CATU the idea of CATU is pretty simple. It's a union for people. We're all aware of all work, you know, people in workplaces that need to be, the importance of them being involved with unions. So this is basically a union that's outside of the workplace. It takes the union from where people work to where people live. It's a basic idea of membership, collective direct action, and grassroots democracy, and gives people support in a union and representation by a union also, Greg.
Okay, interesting. And what kind of cases are you helping people with? Is there an example or examples that you can give us?
Well, we'd all be aware of, you know, obviously the housing crisis is the largest issue that's facing us in the country at the minute. So, you know, we deal with a lot of tenants that are facing rising, skyrocketing rents. You know, the likes of the lack of social housing. People that are in rental properties that are dealing with landlords that need maintenance done to the properties, and landlords are refusing to maintain the properties. You know, perhaps tenants that are living in houses that are damp or mouldy that are affecting their health and their mental health, and that's so we help and support tenants.
And what kind of sort of tools are at your disposal? You know, say for instance, if a member feels that, you know, they're being squeezed out with rent increases, or the landlord is refusing to come and address that black mould in the children's bedroom, like what can CATU do, or actual supports kind of give to try and resolve these issues?
We believe in strength in numbers, Greg, and that's the method of the union. If a person is trying to take something on as an individual, or trying to deal with a landlord, well, then they have that difficulty that they are only an individual. Where if they come on board, CATU has 2,500 members approximately nationwide, all across the 32 counties of Ireland. So we are a 32-county organisation. So we would provide support, mediation, and try and engage and deal with the landlords as a union, rather than that just individual person having to deal with them themselves. So we provide that strength and support, and also the knowledge, and provide the tenants with knowledge as towards their rights as a tenant and how they can deal with these matters. We can provide mediation, you know, or help deal maybe with the landlords directly ourselves as a union, you know, through emailing or letter writing or phone calls to the landlord. So basically providing support and education to tenants.
Is there a lobbying role with CATU as well? Because I note there is a meeting coming up and a workshop that's talking generally about the housing crisis that we are in. And I presume there'll be some reference to the amount of, you know, homes that are being built in the state as well. So is that part of CATU's role?
Well, the workshop that we're providing at the weekend, Greg, it's the first workshop that we're holding in Donegal. It's in Letterkenny Library this Saturday from 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock. So we're just asking people or anybody who's interested in CATU or what CATU provides to come along to the workshop. Basically, we're going to be sitting down and just talking about the issues that are facing people in the locality. So that we can try and get a picture of those issues and try and help people maybe to deal with those issues. We'd also be, you know, looking for people that are interested to possibly come on board look about becoming members of CATU on the day there as well, Greg.
Yeah, as you say, 12 to 2 p.m., the 13th of September, the Central Library. Everyone's welcome, I presume.
That's correct. We're just inviting everybody welcome. You know, we provide support. We have a large range of membership all across the county or all across the country. You know, so as I was saying earlier, you know, we deal with people that are renting, you know, tenants and properties. We deal with council tenants. Our membership consists of people in housing agencies, mortgage holders, because we're aware that a lot of mortgage holders these days are having to deal with vulture funds. And, you know, we deal with a large, we have a large membership from the traveller community, people that are homeless, and also those people, unfortunate people that are living in IPAS centres as well. So we've membership from a large demographic all over the country, Greg.
Do you find that there are particular issues for, like, I'm thinking, you say council tenants, like I'm aware of lots of council tenants who are, don't believe their houses are safe, they're suffering health issues as a result of their homes having been built with defective concrete blocks, and even though you would imagine they could almost be in an advantageous position being in local authority homes, but there's no scheme for them. There's no timelines for them. I think, 80-odd people have been moved out of houses with thousands others, or certainly hundreds others, wondering when they might be gotten around to.
Well, absolutely. You know, we're all aware of the defective blocks situation, awful situation in the county. And we're open to dealing with anybody that wants to come on board as members or that wants to approach us looking for help. As I said, we're only newly set up the Donegal branch in the county. So we're aware that there's a lot of groups that are already on the ground that are dealing with these issues.
Understood, yeah. And I know you're not specific to one area. Yeah. It's just often sometimes you're going to get a trend of inquiries given whatever's pertaining in any particular area. But I do understand that you're not a defective concrete block campaign group either.
No, absolutely not. But we would like to tie in with those organisations that have been working very, very hard on the ground and also with local councillors and that are working hard for the defective block groups. So we would hope to be tying in with them and see what kind of help we can offer to anybody there.
All right, 12 to 2. And it is pronounced CATU, is it?
CATU is correct. CATU, yeah, the okay. Community Action and Tenants Union. So basically, as I was saying, you know, we take on membership from all of those areas, the renters, council tenants, housing agencies, mortgage holders, people from the travelling community, the homeless. So the only people that cannot join CATU are those that have that directly profit from commodification or from housing or communities. So basically, if you're not a landlord or somebody who makes profit from property or carries out evictions, then CATU is there as a union to help and support you.
All right, listen, thanks very much indeed. Look after yourself. Cathal McGlynn there. He is a local member of CATU. They seem to be establishing here, CATU Ireland, and it's the Donegal branch. If you're interested in that, Central Library, Letterkenny, the 13th of September between noon and 2 p.m. And they say that everyone, with the caveats that you heard there, is welcome. Thank you, Greg, for your interview with the moderator of the Presbyterian Church. I listen to the Reverend Jim Lamont every 2 weeks. He's such an excellent preacher and a man of God. We need more like him to bring the message to us. Thank you, Greg. Love your show. Regards, Paula Ryle. And I'm delighted that, I don't know if it were us, we that reached out today, or they to us, but the more inclusive this programme is of everyone, the better for me anyway, so that everyone feels, if you're a member of the community, that you are heard as well. Someone mentioned about the traffic being terrible in Letterkenny this morning at 9:10. A caller says the traffic's the same at 4 o'clock in Letterkenny. On the flags issue, why don't they go to the big cities and put the flags up, not put them up in wee villages in the dark of night? Though there are people now posting videos of them erecting these flags and very proud to be doing so. I was watching the Ireland game on Saturday and I noticed that there was a lack of Ireland flags compared to past games. Maybe they're all up lampposts. A caller says, that is very true. The government have made the flag a political symbol, and that is why a lot of people are not flying it. The tricolour doesn't belong to this government. They have betrayed it. Well, whether or not they have betrayed it, I think you may be referencing something I said, and it's about our long-term relationship with our flag, that it has to mean something. There has to be a sporting event, or it has to be St. Patrick's Day, or we have to be proud about something. And we're at a point now where if you raise the flag, your motivation could be questioned. So, I mean, would I put, like, so the point is, right, what I'm trying to get at here, and I want to phrase this, I'm not in the debate as to why, but now the motivation for flag flying is in question. So we're at a point now that if I stuck a flag out my window at home and left it there, some people might say, well, he's very proud to be Irish and that's fine. Others might go, well, he's a nationalist or he's anti-this or he's anti-that. That's what the flag has become. And I don't think that's helpful for anyone, that you're effectively, you know, you could be labelled as having certain political views if you simply flew the flag. Is that the case in any other country, or is that our history? Is that our reality? Because it does feel a bit weird, if that makes sense. And I'd love to have that conversation, but why would I have to think twice about my motivation for flying the national flag at home, how I might be perceived, people questioning my motivation. It's an interesting conversation. A caller says, if you're born in Ireland, you're Irish. If you have an Irish passport, you're Irish, no matter your colour or religion. But Irish is pride in Ireland too. It's in your heart. Some of the most proud people, Irish people, are those that have gotten their citizenship. And they might not find the flag offensive at all. I just feel sometimes we're speaking on behalf of people rather than actually hearing from people themselves. So are people feeling intimidated? Who are the people that are feeling intimidated? And, you know, rather than people claiming that people are feeling intimidated, I'm not saying they're not, but, you know, I would love just to have a conversation whereby it's two people sort of having a debate about another group of people. And I don't know what that group of people think. And I'm presume there's a whole spectrum of thoughts within that group. But it all feels like our flag has become incredibly pointed and political. And it feels a wee bit, you know, would you be ashamed to buy one?
The 9 till noon show with Letterkenny Credit Union. Now offering mortgages from 40,000 to 600,000 euro with no hidden fees or transaction charges. Letterkenny Credit Union, 9102127.
Attention students, TFI Local Link bus services available nationwide can connect you to a wide range of colleges all year round. Save up to 50% on cash fares when you use your TFI Young Adult or Student Leap Card. For route and timetable information, visit transportforireland.ie. We're Transport for Ireland. We're Transport for You.
Big wins deserve big moments, and we've got the perfect way to celebrate with our great selection of medals and trophies at Michael Murphy Sports, the Northwest leader in sport and training equipment for clubs and schools. Contact us today by emailing info@michaelmurphysports.ie or call 91-28268.
For the biggest names in perfumes and aftershaves, visit McGee's Chemist Letterkenny. Dior, Armani and Hugo Boss. Victor and Rolf, Marc Jacobs and Lancome. Also Gucci, Yves Saint Laurent, Prada and many more. From timeless classics to celebrity favourites, there's a perfume or aftershave for everyone. At McGee's Chemist Letterkenny and online at mcgees.ie.
At Foy's in Ballybuffet and Letterkenny, we're much more than a furniture store. We're your style destination. From elegant sofas to eye-catching lighting, luxurious beds to statement wall art, we offer the largest range of quality furniture and home decor in the Northwest. Every piece is selected for quality, comfort and timeless design. Check out our socials for exclusive offers and inspiration. Foy's, where great interiors begin.
Highland Radio Time Checks, brought to you by Airgrid, the operator and developer of Ireland's electricity grid. Airgrid, powering up communities, powering up Ireland. The time is?
It's 11:19. We welcome onto the show now the Chief Executive Officer of On Commission Toyocon, Art O'Leary. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Morning, Greg. Great pleasure to be here with you again.
Now, we have been trying to sort of get the final field, the runners and riders, so to speak, for the presidential election. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, I suppose, people exercising their hard-fought right to run. So, I suppose, in terms of a presidential election, who can vote?
Well, it's very straightforward, and I'm also quite relieved not to be talking about the runners and riders. I mean, myself and my colleagues at Uncommishu and Talcon are very relieved that we don't really mind about the candidates. Our focus is entirely on voters, and particularly people who don't vote, non-voters too. So first things first, the people who are eligible to vote are Irish citizens. You must be over 18, you must be resident in the state, and you must be on the electoral register. It's very straightforward. So our big ask today, Greg, if I can, is to ask your listeners just to pop on to checktheregister.ie just to make sure that all the details we have for them are correct. And if you're a new voter, go and sign up. It's really, really simple. It takes less than 3 minutes. So in the time this morning that you're waiting for the kettle to boil for your cup of coffee or cup of tea, you can go and register to vote. All you need is your name, your address, your PPS number, and your air code, date of birth, and you're good to go.
In the formal sense, what is the role of president? What are people being asked to vote on?
The president is our head of state. I was fortunate in a previous life in my career to have spent 7 years as Secretary General to the President in Áras an Uachtaráin. So I got a very upfront and close look at the role and duties of the president. So they're detailed in Articles 12 to 14 of the Constitution. They're the formal roles. He signs legislation. He represents Ireland at home as abroad as our first citizen. He makes many, many appointments on the advice of government, including appointments to the courts, our Supreme Court judges, High Court judges, all the superior courts. He appoints commissioned officers in the army. There's a long roll of things that that the president does. But he also has his own or her own agenda as well. You know, that in my first year in Áras an Uachtaráin, I did 500 separate events with the president. You know, it's an extraordinarily busy role. The president gets a couple of hundred invitations a week for him to go and do all kinds of things, you know, to visit communities and schools and take part in various activities. Mm. So it's an extraordinarily busy role.
So in terms of the actual role, the likes of appointing members of government, judges, other officials, accepting resignations or appointments of any member of government on the advice of the Taoiseach, you know, how much latitude does a president have in terms of, you know, what is expected of them, or perhaps powers that they have that they don't often invoke? Because that's forming a lot of the conversation too. I think some people are being, you know, given a false representation of precisely what a president can and can't do. We can't go through it all, right? But maybe you get a sense of my question and that might frame your answer.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of conversation always around the time of presidential elections every 7 years, you know, that, well, what is the president constitutionally entitled to do? Under the Constitution, very many of the president's functions he executes on the advice of government. So, as you said, the appointments, I mean, Dáil Éireann recommends the appointment of the government, and the government then recommends the appointment of many, many individuals too, and the pardons, offering pardons to individuals as well, also done on the advice of government. The areas where he has discretion are in areas like legislation. You know, the president considers the constitutionality of laws that are passed in the House of the Oireachtas, in Dáil Éireann and Seanad Éireann. He's the final check to make sure that this law is in line with our constitution. And the president, if he has doubts about it, then he can call a meeting of the Council of State, and he can also refer the legislation to the Supreme Court for the judges to make a determination in relation to this as well. So there are a few other discretionary powers that the president has, like refusing to dissolve the Dáil as well in circumstances where the Taoiseach has lost the confidence of a majority of Dáil Éireann, but they are very limited. And for some of your listeners who are interested in it, it's a very accessible read, our constitution. Have a look online at articles 12, 13 and 14 of the constitution, and it will give you a good sense of what it is that the president can and can't do.
We had a relatively low turnout. I don't know actually what the expected turnout is 7 years ago. I think it's the more people that vote on anything, for me, the better.
Indeed. And actually, I looked at the turnout figures for the last presidential elections, the last four, and since 1990, and the turnout figures have varied from 66% to 44%, which is a huge swing in turnout numbers. You know, this is why we're encouraging people to register to vote. Young people, 60,000 young people turned 18 since the general election. This is our first opportunity to vote. So the more people who vote, the more representative the president can be, the greater the mandate the president has. And like we always say here at An Cumasúin Toghchán, your vote is your voice. You know, if you don't vote, you allow other people to speak for you. And you'd never let anyone do that in any other part of your life. So, I mean, imagine telling a young person that what music they had to listen to, what clothes they had to wear, what food they had to eat when they went to restaurants. No, I mean, so you shouldn't allow the same thing to happen in this most fundamental of rights, the ability to vote.
Okay. And is there a go-to place where people can get more information?
All of the information is on our website, electoralcommission.ie. And if you have any questions at all, you can drop us an email, give us a ring. We love to engage. We'll have the presidential election in 45 days' time, so there's plenty of opportunities to do some research on some of the candidates who you'd like to vote as well. But if you have any questions at all, please get in touch.
Thanks so much for your time again. I do appreciate it. Listen, we'll touch base with you or your colleagues closer to the time, but no harm now giving people plenty of notice, forewarned and all of that type of stuff. Thank you for your time, Art.
Look forward to that. Thanks,
Take
Greg.
Take care. Goodbye. That's Art O'Leary there. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Right. So, Irish citizens that are ordinarily citizens are the only ones who can vote. For those who haven't voted before, make sure you get on. They are saying, because it's the head of state for the next 7 years. And first and foremost, check the register. And you never know when an election might happen anyway, by the way. So no harm in checking that register one way or another. If there's any other questions or things I missed on that, get in touch with us and I'll try and get some answers for you. A caller says, I'm glad you're in a city whereby you can get from A to B quicker than if you are in a town like Letterkenny. Another, while you're in the Donegal tent, shall be self-made people whom shall be courted for our taxpayers' money. Questionable, at least. I'm not sure what that's about. When you are in the Donegal tent there. Okay, maybe that's to do with the London thing. It was just regular people in the tent. There was no la-di-das. It was just mostly regular Donegal folk. Typical of Irish politics, everything is a 5 or 10 year plan. Either they are out of power or the electorate have forgotten about it by the time any project should be delivered. We're talking about the rail here. Remember pre-election, we were told that the public park in the Martyrs Field in Drumbo was a shovel-ready project going on for 6 years, and the same gates and padlocks are on the field without a shovel in sight. Good morning, Greg. What happened to all the money from dog licences, etc.? Why is it not being used for the SPCA purposes? Another, the ISPCA have adopted the same method that this government have used in dealing with the public, and that is to ignore public opinion, and they will get over it. But people are no longer willing to be treated in this way and are beginning to react. Back to the presidential election. From early signs, it looks like the presidential race is going to be another rigged election. Already, the political establishment have closed ranks and limited who will be selected. There are many great potential candidates like Marie Steen have little chance of being selected. Never mind elected. As usual, the establishment and their media lackeys will decide the outcome. That's true Irish democracy in action. It's the Irish people, if the truth be told. The Irish people are powerful and strong, and they make the decisions. I certainly can't influence people. and they either are in favour of what the government's doing or they're against what the governments are doing, and they'll follow it one way or other. I would just have a lot of faith in the electorate, if I'm honest with you. And the more media, whether you think I do it or not, the more media try and influence or control it, I think the more pushback there is. Exactly, Greg. Gardaí should be on a unit or have a unit on standby for this thuggish behaviour, like diffing and take them off the roads. We can't get to a point whereby there's an acceptance that people can do whatever they like on the roads without risk of running foul of an Gardaí Síochána, you know. And that's not necessarily decisions made locally. It's giving them more resources. Get the cars back out into the streets. Why are local businesses having to close so the government can give foreigners a 60 or 70? Well, that never happened. I'm not going to read that because I know the video you're referring to and the words were put into that man's mouth. So I'm not going to mention anything about it. He couldn't understand the question. And I know what you're on about. I'll dig a bit further into it and then read that message out. But that was framed a certain way. In relation to loud cars, a small village in Ballindrate outside Lifford, there's cars revving all day and all night, banging exhausts and racing through the small village, not giving a care in the world for the people living there. That's a tough way to live your life. A caller says, I think that tourism and community development has never been more important. This leads to a studied in transition year and young people can volunteer. We need more emphasis on volunteerism. Maybe this could be done through the work of the president's office. The older generation need to be addressed. For young people, volunteering is fantastic. It's great for anyone. It's great for your experience. It's great for interacting with other people. It's great for your CV. You know, if you bring that into a job with you that you've volunteered for your own local area, your own local community, it is a big tick. There's lots of advantages. I'm joined on the programme now by Professor Rose Ann Kenny, who's principal investigator of TILDA. Good morning to you, Rose Ann. Thanks for your time.
Good morning.
Right. A very important report has been published. It's Wave 6, it's a Wave 6 report. But before we get into that, just can you tell me the role of TILDA briefly, if you don't mind, Roseanne?
Of course, I'll describe what TILDA is. TILDA stands for the Irish Longitudinal Study on Ageing. We went into the field collecting data for TILDA in 2009. We randomly selected 8,500 people aged 50 and over across Ireland, and we have a number of participants in Donegal for taking part in the study, and the same people are assessed every 2 years and have now been so since 2009. And we collect subjective data. That means we ask people, for example, do you have high blood pressure? Do you have cholesterol? What drugs are you on? And then we bring them to the Health Assessment Centre in Trinity, where we measure blood pressure, measure cholesterol, measure diabetes bloods, so that we know what people think is going on and what is really happening.
And I mean, it's very useful actually for those taking part to highlight some medical conditions they may well have, because what's been shown here is that there are an awful lot of people walking around in this growing age demographic with undiagnosed medical conditions, the likes of high cholesterol, undiagnosed high blood pressure, stroke, hypertension.
Absolutely. So first of all, to say that half of those who had high blood pressure actually weren't aware that they had high blood pressure, and almost 40% had high blood pressure. That's the first thing. But they had high blood pressure when we measured it. So it is the case. And secondly, even those who were aware they had high blood pressure weren't actually achieving the target, the goal blood pressure that treatment should be addressing, which is 120 over 80. That should be your target, unless contraindicated. So big gaps there in the treatment of something, high blood pressure, which is the commonest cause of stroke and indeed dementia and heart failure and kidney disease in Ireland.
Yeah, and other conditions, diabetes, osteoporosis, chronic pain, all in many people going undiagnosed. And I was interested too in not just the physical health, but the what came up in terms of one's mental health and the level of depression or depressive symptoms that was quite high, higher than I would have hoped.
higher than one would have hoped. So from the objective measures, when we used validated ways of making a diagnosis, if you like, of depression, we found 12% prevalence, but only 4% of people were admitted to or acknowledged. Mm-hmm. The other way around. We found 12%, but only 4% were recognised and knew that they had depression. And of those who had depression, a majority had never discussed it with a healthcare professional, including general practitioners. Mm-hmm. So, depression's treatable. Depression can result in lack of mobility, terrible quality of life, of course, and have an impact on the individual, but those around. And it is important to address.
Mm-hmm. And of course, one of those contributing factors over time could be loneliness. And loneliness, both urban and rural, is a persistent issue for older people. Did you notice it worsening through the waves as people got older? Is there a trend there, Roseanne?
So very good. So as people get older, there is a trend. But the good news is during COVID, loneliness doubled because we did a COVID wave of data collection. And thankfully, loneliness has gone down back down to the levels it was before the pandemic. So that's good news. Nonetheless, loneliness is not uncommon. And we know loneliness is really bad for, and we've shown from the study, physical health and obviously mental health is associated with depression. And married couples are less likely to experience loneliness than people who are living on their own, or parents living with children are less likely to experience loneliness. Community engagement and volunteering and good social networks obviously protect against mm-hmm. loneliness. So again, I see a positive thing here in that the levels since COVID have gone down, and though it's prevalent, we can do something about it in terms of community engagement and encouraging communities to address this issue.
There's so much going on in Donegal in terms of fantastic organisations providing brilliant services for older people. It could be sporting, it could be music, it could be just get-togethers. And we spend an awful lot of time trying to connect these people with those services because they are well spread even around a rural county. So anyone listening who does feel lonely, or maybe you've lost a partner or an older child's moved away or whatever it might be, there are amazing organisations and groups and individuals that can give you a space or a place or somewhere to go, because we all got an insight into loneliness. So not all of us, many of us got an insight into loneliness during the COVID-19 pandemic. We've seen how it affected young people.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, how it affected young people because they couldn't socialise how they might be expected to. People in their late teens, early 20s because of college. We all got a sense of that. So we should have an understanding when we talk about loneliness of what we're talking about, I think.
Absolutely agree. And now, bearing in mind that if somebody is experiencing loneliness, it is quite hard to reach out. So, but people, we're aware of that, and organisations or communities will. You'd be surprised how warm and embracing people can be, and how we all recognise it's difficult to reach out. So I think Donegal is probably one of the counties that's particularly good in terms of creativity as well. All of those things, creativity, engaging in creative arts, we've shown from other waves of the study, make a big difference to loneliness and quality relationships.
I think it's really quite interesting that the main headlines from this are often issues that are raised with us, or there's a particular focus on, because it means we're hitting the right marks, and it means that your study is as well, if that makes sense. Caregiving, people who are caring for a loved one. I mean, I speak to, men and ladies who are in their early 70s with a partner of the same age, and they're a full-time carer for them, or the oldest daughter in a family who's themselves 60 or 63 finds themselves then almost the permanent carer for one or both parents or another sibling. There's a great deal of love and compassion and happiness in being able to do that, but that comes also with a great deal of burden in terms of their own time, respite, financial burden, the burden it takes on their health.
Absolutely. The research lead on this, Christina McGarrigle, has done some lovely work, and it would appear that after anyone giving over a period of time more than 50 hours of caring per week significantly experiences physical and emotional health problems themselves. So I think the response to that is, how can NGOs or the state step in once people are at a threshold of about 40, because you don't want to go to 50 where the consequences have set in, and actually assist people. One of the one of our caring NGOs with whom we coupled for the report suggested that respite care should be made available to people. It's very hard to get respite care. In other words, where someone you're caring for can actually go somewhere for a week or two to free up the carer to refresh themselves. Otherwise, they will become ill.
I was on a plane yesterday, and the flight attendants said, you know, you have to put your seatbelt belt on yourself first before you can do it for someone else, and you have to look after yourself when caring to make sure that you're healthy, but also you can do your best job. And there's not one size fits all for us aging either. And I don't know how nuanced the services is. We have a situation here, Professor, whereby, you know, we have a significant aging population, perhaps above and beyond the national average here in Donegal. And we really need to be investing in facilities and health to accommodate that. And there is this sense that we're not doing it. We know what's coming. We know where we're going to be at in terms of demographics in years to come. And we should be building resources and services and a health service that takes into consideration that. And I just wish we were doing more of that as a state, not least here in our own part of the island, Professor.
Yeah, so I think there's a two-pronged approach to that. I absolutely agree. But I'm hoping that the report will empower individuals to say, okay, this is what I need to do. These are the thresholds I need to meet in terms of those measures. For example, everybody over 45 and upwards, should have blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes status, and their medications reviewed at least once a year. Every 3 to 5 years, have a DEXA scan to exclude osteopenia, osteoporosis. And if you are experiencing mood problems, then go to the general practitioner. Now, so that's empowering the individual. Of course, there are big pressures on our family practitioners, 4,500 in the country, aging demographic. You know, frankly, the system is having catch-up problems. So my own view is we have to think outside the box. That screening is not complex. Measuring blood pressure, taking blood samples, none of that is complex. And maybe we can use pharmacies more to do that sort of thing. And no better person than a pharmacist, actually, to review medications. That's what they're particularly trained to do. So we may need to think outside the box about systems. But at the moment, at least if individuals are aware of what they can do for themselves, you know, and have a responsibility to do for themselves.
Professor Rose and Kenny, sorry for taking up so much of your time. It's just an issue I believe to be very important. But thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Professor. Okay, we'll be back with more after the break. Now, Dr. Brian Hunt is Director of Policy with the Law Society of Ireland, and he's with me now. Good morning to you. Brian, thank you so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, now, you have pulled together, as a collective, the pre-budget submission. And there is a general sense, is there, that the Irish justice system is under pressure, overstretched, underfunded, and I take it to resolve all that, it's not going to take one budget. You're looking for something greater.
Yeah, we're looking for an increased level of investment, Greg, over the next number of years. I think the justice system rarely gets the level of priority that it deserves when it comes to budget time. And maybe just to put spending on the justice system in context, the annual budget for the courts and the judiciary would only keep the health service funded for less than a week. So in the context of the government's spending, the amount that is actually spent on the justice system from year to year is incredibly low. So making a real impact is not going to costs a vast amount of money. And what we are proposing is that changes would be made on a phased basis. We want to see an increased level of investment across a range of areas.
What's the situation in having, you know, the people there in the future to practice law? What's the age demographic like? Is there anything that needs to be done? And I suppose maybe even in a particularly a rural context to ensure we have the legal brains there to keep, because it's an incredibly important cog, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. So, Greg, I guess the term that we use for what you're putting your finger on there is legal deserts. We see the risk of legal deserts emerging. And what we mean when we speak of legal deserts is we can foresee that in time to come, in the next, you know, 10 to 15 years and beyond, we can see towns and villages that may find themselves without a practicing solicitor. And I think for many towns and villages, the solicitor is a key member of the community and provides a vital service and facilitates people within the area having access to justice and being able to freely access the advice that they need should they end up in a dispute or should they need the services of a solicitor. So this is something that concerns us, and one of the initiatives that the Law Society has been putting our weight behind is the small practice traineeship grants. And right now, there are three solicitor firms in Donegal who are availing of the small practice traineeship grants. And what that means is that the Law Society is funding the training contracts and the costs associated with training a solicitor. And if we weren't providing that level of support, you know, the economic burden of paying for a trainee and paying for their education, it wouldn't be viable for some firms. And that's something that's a concern to us. We can do only so much of the heavy lifting. And what we're calling for is for government to, you know, to take the small practice traineeship grant as an example of a successful initiative. And we need to see that being rolled out on a much wider basis. And we need the funding to make that happen.
I know there are concerns about the court's infrastructure, you know, seeking more investment and legal aid and family law services as well. But I'm looking down at concerns over mediation. And I wonder if we did more in terms of mediation, would that free up more court time for other cases that can't be resolved during mediation? Are they as intertwined as me outside looking in would consider?
I think, Greg, yes, you're absolutely right. The courts are clogged up. They're doing their best in the circumstances that they face, but there are delays in pretty much all of the courts in Ireland, and this is particularly problematic at district court level. So we do want to see other avenues being opened up for the resolution of disputes. As you know, and people in Donegal will be familiar with the idea that when a dispute arises, people can be quick to get the matter into the courts, and people don't tend to threaten, "I'll take you to mediation." It's very much court focused. But for many disputes, the courts are actually not the right place to have the matter resolved. Disputes, they can be resolved much more quickly, much more efficiently, in mediation, in through arbitration and so on, and other forms of alternative dispute resolution.
And if that became cultural too, it would be, you know, you would hope it would become one of the first options. You know, let's go to mediation, but culturally
it's not
what we do, is it?
I think you're right, Greg. It is a cultural, it's a mindset change, and that's something that can't happen overnight. That will take time. But legislation was passed in 2017 to establish a mediation council. And one of the primary roles of the mediation council would be to promote a greater use of alternatives to going to court. And so we're calling on government to establish that mediation council. The legislation is there. It needs to be funded. And once it can get its work underway, we would like to think in 5-10 years' time, it's a longer game, that we would see more disputes being resolved through mediation and arbitration.
And I was surprised through the course of this show to see solicitors advocating strongly for this, because, again, from the outside looking in, it would have thought been a bit like turkeys voting for Christmas, you know, less work and that type of stuff. But it's actually, you know, a lot of solicitors, they're saying, listen, this isn't for court here. You should be fit to resolve it, because it's going to be complicated, it's going to be expensive, and things are going to get more bitter, and you know what I mean? So I think mediation would be definitely a favourite option in many cases where it's appropriate.
Yeah, Greg, like litigation by its nature, it's a long, it's a prolonged, drawn-out process. It's often very stressful. Most people don't want to be part of a process like that. And under mediation, a dispute can be settled very, very quickly and at a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, and in terms of actually the impact on those taking cases or cases being taken against them, we drag it out too long here, don't we, when we look at European averages? We could be doing things better, presumably better infrastructure, space, time, etc., to get cases that have to go through the courts as quickly as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Greg, as Ireland's economy, it's thriving. It's doing very, very well. And as a result, you see the throughput in the courts has been rising in parallel with that effectively. And what we haven't been doing is making the kind of investments that we needed to make as a nation, making the kind of investments that we needed to make in our court system. So the number of judges, the ratio of judges to population and so on, when you look at all those statistics, we have fallen behind. We didn't even keep a pace, never mind moving ahead, but we haven't kept a pace. And as a result, the delays within our court system are endemic.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be that way because we're a small country. Like, you know, we are a small country. We should be able to get the certain things right. Brian, listen, I wish I had more time, but thank you very much for giving us an overview there. And look after yourself.
Great to talk to you, Greg.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Too. Bye-bye. That's Brian Hunt, Director of Policy with the Law Society of Ireland. 086 60 25000, the WhatsApp and text number, if you have anything to say in relation to that. Just a quick word on the roads. Now, there's been a road traffic collision which has forced the closure of the N14 between Ballyhooly and Ballinlack junctions. We've no further details other than that. But if you are travelling the N14 on that road, be conscious of diversions. And with the nature of these instances, the diversions have to go in place really quite quickly. And I'm not quite sure how capable they are to accommodate all the traffic of different sizes. So maybe if you can, for the time being, and we'll let you know when that road reopens, take alternative routes. But there are diversions in place there. And as I say, we'll bring you any details of that incident just when it's appropriate to do so. Let me see. Is it true you only have to be living in this country for 3 years to become a citizen? No, there are three main ways you can apply for Irish citizenship by naturalisation. You have to legally have lived in Ireland for 5 years, so not three. You are married to or in a civil partnership with an Irish citizen, or you are applying on behalf of a minor. So if you lived in Ireland as a refugee, you can also become an Irish citizen after 3 years. We have a system in place to help they have a system in place to help people through the citizenship process. So you're right, I suppose the 3 years does apply to people with refugee status in this country for 3 years. So to answer your question, actually, it's yes. And I was too quick perhaps to say no. Rightio, let us bid you adieu. That's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thank you to Donna Marie Doherty, who researched and produced the show, ably assisted by Shannon Wilkin. We're back with you to do all again tomorrow morning from 9 o'clock. So please rejoin.